Hi, I'm Benji Moody. Welcome to another episode of From the Hip, where we dig deep into the history of contemporary South African music. By the mid-70s, a second wave of rock music had peaked. The underground bands like Freedom's Children, Hawk, Suck, Abstract Truth and Otis Waygood had either imploded or left the country on a wave of public and record company apathy. Instead, the music scene was populated by a host of cover bands like Copperfield, The Rising Suns, The Peanut Butter Conspiracy and others, churning out the de rigueur hits of the day in order to put food on the table. With a few exceptions, South African original rock music was in the doldrums, and emerging international music movements like garage and glam had barely made a dent, and although punk was just around the corner, the scene here looked and sounded jaded. However, musical redemption was at hand, not out of cosmopolitan Joburg, but from the dusty mining town of Springs on the East Rand. They had more drummers than Spinal Tap. They combined punk's raucous energy with melodic tunes about off-the-wall subjects, and they released one of South Africa's greatest rock albums, Into the Night We Slide. They were, and still are, Radio Rats. And I'm so happy to welcome founder members Jonathan Hanley and Dave Davies to From the Hip. How's it, lads? It's been a long time, eh?
Hi, Benji. Do you still play bass guitar?
I occasionally dabble and play the same old licks over and over. But, I mean, I've still got my Fender bass. My glory days, or my hopefully glory days of playing, are long, long overdue.
And do you still play it upside down and left-handed?
You've got a very good memory, Jonathan. Yes, I do. Absolutely. I must be one of the few people from the East Rand that didn't play with the Radio Rats. I mean, you had a lot of different members, you know.
Especially drummers, yes.
I guess the reason for that was probably because I was from Brakpan.
Yeah, Brakpan is like a psychiatric condition.
There's a lot of truth in that. So let's set the scene, Jonathan. You were born in not-so-rock-and-roll land of Tanganyika, which is now Tanzania. How did you land up in Springs?
My father was a geologist, and they had to get out of Tanganyika then, mid-50s, and we came via ship to Durban and then straight to Springs. My older brother was born there in Kongwa, Tanzania. I was born there, and my younger brother too, Graham, who played for the Safari Suits. And then we moved to Springs, and in 1959, my sister was born. That was the last handy kid, but she was born in Springs. The three of us were born in East Africa.
And you, Dave, I mean, you born and bred in Springs?
No, actually, I come from a civilized place called Port Elizabeth. Grew up there as a young kid and moved to Springs in the early 60s. My father's family was up here, so they were all working on the mine, and they said to my father, "Davey, come up here, you can make a lot of money." So, of course, Daddy packed us up, put us in the Hudson, and up we came in the middle of winter, July. I looked at the place as we were driving along the road. It was all brown grass and rusted metal all over the place. And I thought, well, I'm being dragged off into hell here. What am I being punished for? Because, you know, in PE, the grass is always green. It rains every day. I thought, well, here I am in Springs, but I'll get out of here as soon as what I possibly can. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I'm still in Springs. Everybody else has left. But Springs is a really pleasant little town. It's got a very nice history, very nice people, a lot of really interesting characters. So, I'm settled in Springs. I'll probably fall off my perch into the mire of Springs dirt.
So for both of you, when did the music bug bite? What was that like kind of moment where you went, oh, I want to be in a band. I'm going to be a singer. I'm going to be a guitar player.
I won a raffle. I was in Welcome High School at the time in about Standard 8, and I won a third prize for a raffle, which was a music voucher for the CNA, a record voucher for R2.50. And I went to the CNA, and I knew of a song called On the Road Again by Canned Heat, and there it was on this album, Boogie by Canned Heat. So it was the first album I ever bought. And my older brother was replete with albums, and so I grew up on his music. But when I heard that album, it was the blues, and I didn't recognize it as the blues. It just sounded completely strange to me, you know, the guitar sound and everything. Mm-hmm. And I played my mom's knitting needles to it. So I started off as a knitting needle drummer in Velcom.
That guy's voice in Candied was absolutely phenomenal.
Well, you know what's freaky is that it was the second album that I bought. The first album was Born Free, the soundtrack, because I was obsessed with Elsa the Lioness. And my second, the same thing, I picked up the album at Melodies in Benoni, Boogie with Candied, and then I heard that beginning to On the Road Again, you know, with Al Wilson, that beautiful falsetto and that groove. Amazing, hey? And you, Dave, I mean, when did you get to the point where you wanted to kind of be a singer?
My mother's family down in PE were, everybody was musical. Everybody played an instrument, a guitar or a mouth organ, a piano or something like that. So I got into it at a very, very young age. Had a band when I was 10 years old, myself and my two cousins, Roy Dobell and Stanley Dobell. And we called ourselves the 3Ds. And we made a bit of noise on acoustic guitars and caketons as drums. It was great fun. The follow-up to that, of course, was Coming to Springs. Played around with a lot of guys. I was always on the guitar or something like that. I met a guy called Niall Bell. Niall and I had played around in a band previously called Justice Plain. And Niall introduced me to Jonathan. I was totally impressed with Jonathan's style of music immediately. I thought he was the musical genius. Well, I always say this, but it's true. Jonathan is a musical genius. I think that there are very few people that can stand up to him internationally even, that can write such good songs and play such nice finger-picking guitar. Yeah, when I met Jonathan through Now, Jonathan had a band called Slither. It was a bunch of medical students. Jonathan was at Fitz University. Chris Wright, John Ireland, who was John Griffiths at the time, Shorty Kutsia, Lee Janney. Slither was quite a bit of fun for a while, and then that fell apart. From the ashes of Slither, Radio Rats arose.
So where does the Warehouse Rats come into it?
We were rehearsing in a warehouse between Slither and Radio Rats. And it was a geological warehouse in East Geduld Springs. And we could practice in it. Acoustics were appalling. And then Radio Rats, I just saw this magazine called Rockstar, which was very much like NME and Melody Maker, but it was smaller. But the CNA had it, and there was a rat playing guitar. So I copied it, being into plagiarism. This rat was so poor that he had to plug his mail order guitar into a radio because he didn't have an amplifier. Well, that was my idea. So I draw these very, very primitive, fat, furry rats. And Radio Rats had a nice alliteration to it. That's where that comes from.
Jonathan, I seem to remember a photo of you when I was working on when we did the retro reissue of you in full makeup with a paint-splattered guitar.
Yes.
Was that Slither?
No. That was Radio Rats. I mean, you didn't get up on stage. So we went to Carnival Novelty and we got Clown White, which you could spread on your face, and then mascara, and then spotty t-shirts, and then a backdrop, black material painted with PVA white. We got into the whole theatrical gothic thing. That's pre Into the Night We Slide. There's nothing worse than seeing a band that looked like a bunch of roadies.
You're so very strange, driving in my car. The highway is black candle wax bound by the stars. My tallow hands reach out for dials that come and glow. These highways are my gothic eyes inside.
Short-lived phase. We were goths before anybody else was. And it was a bit of fun, the makeup thing and so on. Like, I still get snide remarks today about when people see a picture of us standing, oh, you guys were goths. Yeah.
When you started out, I mean, Jonathan, you've obviously been writing songs for quite a long time. Was there a common purpose or a goal, like, or was it just... Did you go, right, we want to be famous, or was just we want to have some fun in a rock and roll band?
We were dead keen on making lots of money and being famous. Well, that didn't happen, but what started it off was actually making demos, because you could go to a Musician Sound Center in Hillbrow. You could go up that escalator and MSC, Terry Akers and Dennis Feldman, and they had an 8-track analog machine there, a little room of a studio. I met Jethro Buteau then, and that was 1976, 77. For about 30, 40 rand, you could make a demo. So we would rehearse a song, run in there, record it, and then it would be on cassette. And it was the most exciting thing to record a demo. That preceded Into the Night We Slide, because about 7 of those demos eventually ended up with Joburg Records, Cheryl van Blerk, and Cheryl van Blerk wasn't with Joburg, but she was with Gramophone Records, and Patrick van Blerk of Joburg Records, and they liked what they heard. But I mean, these were like really good demos with nice solid bass and drums and everything, and they were real, and that's what the album came from. So it was that too. It was recording demos, and I've done that all my life. I still stick to 8-tracks.
By then, the lineup had solidified with the addition of Herbie Parkin, who was, I believe, called Dave. You had two Daves in the band.
Herbie arrived at my record bar. He bopped in there with his Afro hairdo and so on. And he said, I'm a bass player. I'm looking for a band. Well, I looked the guy up and down. I said, we've got to practice on Saturday up above the Palladium in our little room there. Why don't you come along? Yeah, he did, and he fitted in immediately. He was a great bass player, absolutely solid, and definitely a good addition to the band as it was at that time. You know, we'd already had a drummer and a bassist that were both terrible.
I can tell you a story about the drummer.
We were playing at the Oasis. Jono, you remember?
Yes.
And
remember it well.
Yeah, Herbie broke a bass string. So the whole bass, of course, goes out of tune immediately, as you would know being a bass player, Benji. And so he stopped playing. Our drummer at the time lost his cool and picked one of his Zildjian cymbals up off the stand and hurled it across the floor like a frisbee. Now, you can imagine if that had actually collected with somebody, it would have been a major damage. So
that wasn't Gordon Trekker, by the way, was it?
Can we mention names? Yes.
Of course you can.
Okay.
You know why I say that? Because Gordon Trekker played in my band, along with another one who played in the Radio Rat, Lionel Ingram. And we rehearsed underneath the Oasis in that storeroom
in the
at the
dungeon.
Bottom of the Oasis.
Wonderful, yeah.
In the dungeon.
It was a great venue. You know Gordon Trekker, and I'm sure you're acquainted with his temperament, yeah.
Sure.
So you can understand what I'm saying. It was horrendous. Anyway, just one little story.
So there were three of you, and then you had a veritable horde of drummers that passed through. I wasn't joking when we said you had more drummers than Spinal Tap. I mean, at the last count, I think 9. I mean, what's with that? What about this revolving cast of drummers?
Drummers are essential to keeping a band together. And if they can't be drummers and keep the beat and not try and grandstand. You know, they must be at the back. They must play with the bass, and they must hold the thing. They are the engine of the group. You either get a drummer that can play okay but can't keep time, or else you get a drummer that wants to be a lead guitarist. I've always said they're not musicians, they're athletes.
Jonathan, what was your take on the drummers?
The best drummer was finally Leonard Dixon, who played on Into the Night We Slide. And he was an absolute Springs phenomenon. He would sit in with us at the Oasis, and then people would stand around and look at him. You know, there would just be a crowd of men looking at Leonard playing the drums. That's what you need in a band. You need somebody like Leonard. You need a drumming phenomenon. And that's what Leonard is still to this day. He's in Vienna now. He has survived in that music industry. They always employ him to play with various orchestras and everything. And he's the most unreliable, unpredictable person, but just a superb drummer. And for rock, you know. And then we recorded him again in Springs in 2013. He came for a funeral over the Easter weekend. And I bought drums in Pietermaritzburg, drove here, set them up in Michelle Kent's house in Castledale. Leonard came, and on the first day he played to about five or six new songs, which eventually became Cyanide Lake, which is Murray Park, which is Springs. It had cyanide in the water. And then the next day we were going to finish the album, and it was, where's Leonard? And, you know, and we had to hunt him down in Springs. We eventually got him. And on that day, we finished the album, Cyanide Lake. And I took it home and on my little 8-track. And I thought, you know, I can't bugger this recording up because it's Leonard. And then I got Herbie. He was in Sweden then. Herbie played bass and Dave did vocals. And it was myself. And it was in 2013. That was another album, the original lineup, Cyanide Lake.
That's a great story, that.
Yeah. And that track, Cyanide Lake, which is about Murray Park, basically, is really a good track.
I was listening to it recently, and it really sticks out, and it tells the story of people of Springs and places where we used to go.
I just dreamed, kept me away. Saw this arm rise up and change. A white guitar from high and far over Cyanide Lake. Touch of anthrax, north and south. Wind blew soft and the reeds cried. The arm came out, oh, we went quiet. Cyanide Lake. Karen Lindsay, Carmen Julie, many others stood by me. Saw the guitar taken by that arm from Cyanide Lake. But we never swam at Cyanide Lake. Cyanide Lake, Cyanide Lake. Got down there, dead and cold. Where a goddess stands, and in her hole. Sacrifice to rock and roll, Cyanide Lake.
I vaguely remember you did work in a record bar. What was the name of that record bar in Springs again?
My record bar was called Good Sounds up in Selkirk. That was the first record bar. I was subletting from from the steakhouse next door. And then the lease ran out, and I thought, no, Selkort's going to die. I better move to town, so, which I did. Then I changed the name to the Disc Jockey. And I had a next to the Kinney 400 in 3rd Avenue. That was the nice shop. And we used to practice in the back of that shop. It was a lovely shop.
Just talk about Into the Night We Slide. I mean, you've been quoted, Jonathan, as being influenced by Iggy and the Stooges, Bowie, Stones, Dr. Feelgood, Pistols. They all share like a commonality, I think, of rebellion. Was that the initial driving force for you in writing songs for that album?
I think all of those names are. When that album was done, I hadn't heard the Sex Pistols. And in fact, we were waiting for punk. It eventually came in the form of The Damned. I was very disappointed by The Damned. I thought punk would be much more beaty and melodic because that's what I read in NME. You know, I thought this is going to be great. So in retrospect, I wasn't very much influenced by punk, but it was a wave that we were swept up in. Influences on Into the Night We Slide. I can hear the Stooges, and you gave me those two Stooges albums. You gave me Funhouse and the first Stooges album. And Funhouse is phenomenal. I couldn't have liked Funhouse when I was a kid. It's a 1970 album, 1970, 71. I mean, I was in Standard 9 and Matric then. I would have hated Funhouse. Around about 1977, 78, Funhouse was just phenomenal. That sound, Down on the Street, that's the kicker behind Into the Night We Slide. That beat, that solid beat, and Leonard could provide it. The way they hold back dirt, the way it just goes, dum, da, da, dum, dum, da, dum. Now, that's the sort of thing Leonard would do. Other drummers, they would bloody well speed it up, you know. You got to hold them back. You got to hold a song back. And, Funhouse, one of the best albums on earth.
The Rats weren't a punk band, nor were the Stooges. Do you regard the early Rat sound as a garage band sound?
Well, yes, but we wanted to play good rock music. I mean, I remember hearing Conglomeration, which was Trevor Rabin. They played in Velcom. They played at a Matric Farewell, and then they played at a session the night afterwards. And they played In a Gutter de Vida. Nice, solid beat. And Trevor Rabin and that other guy trading, the guy who played with Peach.
Alan Rose.
Yes, I think they were together in Conglomeration. And I was a school kid. I just stood there mesmerized, absolutely mesmerized. Those are my influences. We didn't see stuff from overseas, we just didn't see it.
Hey, this place has a dead waitress and 1 million flies. Orange tabletops that damage my eyes. A road outside that clashes with the limousines. People that go out and people that come in. Owner of this place has more than one stomach. Caught us for fingers and races down his whack back. When at the tail, he's an ex gunner. With that at each year and a butchery calendar. That's right. How long does it take?
I mean, when it comes to singers, I mean, if you look back at Bowie and Jagger and things like that, are those the kind of influences on your style of singing?
Yes, when you mention Bowie, I look at Jonathan. There's a lot of Bowie influence with Jonathan's vocals, I think. Jono, don't you think so?
Yeah, for sure.
My influences go way back to early rock and roll, Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis and stuff like that. And obviously the Stones, Brian Ferry, Roxy Music, Iggy Pop later. I like to think I've got my own style. I do adapt my vocal delivery to the storyline of the song I'm singing. I don't try to copy other guys consciously, but I'm sure it comes through.
It's all mimicry, like bird song. If you hear a bird singing, you're actually hearing a bird that would have been singing 2,000 years ago during the time of Christ, you might say, because bird song hasn't changed, and birds learn by mimicry.
That's an interesting observation. I mean, the songs on Into the Night We Slide owe more than a nod to Bowie and the Spiders from Mars. I mean, was that just how it developed, yeah, mimicry?
Yeah, it's just, you know, you like it, you copy it. But then what comes out is not exact. It's warped by your own stupidity, you know. So you're trying to be like some, you know, great, like Elvis or something like that, and you come out like an arsehole. But it's mimicry. So it's like a mussy trying to imitate a lark.
I think it's a hodgepodge of various artists that you could get thrown at you throughout your life that all have an influence on you. Everybody develops their own style from the hodgepodge that they've already been exposed to.
Where were you playing live at that particular time, around the time of Into the Night We Slide?
Springs, Polo Club, Oasis, everywhere.
Rub Shalom.
The famous Van Riebeck Hotel, maybe?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
If those walls could talk.
Yeah, where you pick up your teeth with a broken arm.
Yeah, Springs was a wild place. That's for sure. Were you surprised to get a deal so early with Patrick van Blerk and Joburg Records?
Surprised, yeah. We pushed very hard, desperately wanted to make an album. I think if we hadn't done it through Joburg, we would have recorded more demos. We would have gotten slicker and slicker. But the big difference there was Greg Cutler. So Greg Cutler came and rehearsed us. He chose 10 songs. We rehearsed them. And we could play them anyway. We could play them live. And then when we were rehearsed, then we rushed into the studio. So we made 10 demos there in a weekend. We did all the backing. Because at the end of that weekend, Leonard's job was done. But he knew the songs backwards. We all did. And then all we had to do was add Dave's vocals and a little bit of lead. So that was Into the Night We Slide. And that is actually how to make an album.
Yeah, rehearse it until it's tight and then lay it down. Did you lay it down pretty much live?
Yeah, we were playing together. Yes. We didn't know any other method. Yeah, what really used to upset me was reading Enemy, and then you would see that the Rolling Stones went to that Caribbean island and spent 3 months recording. And then I think, well, that's decadent. We spent a weekend.
Is that all the time you needed to make Into the Night We Slide? Like a weekend and...
No, the backing tracks.
Oh, the backing tracks.
The backing tracks were done and dusted. So drums, bass, guide vocals and rhythm guitar and whatever else we could fit into Saturday and Sunday was done, because we were so well rehearsed. It was like George Martin. I mean, he said recording the early Beatles, it was like a jukebox. You pushed a button and then the song played. Those guys knew their songs. So that's actually how to work.
You know who shares that philosophy is the boys from Evoid. Also, same story. Rehearsed it live, played it live, and everything, went into the studio in 3 days. That album was done. So I think it's definitely the way to, even today, with all the changes that are happening, it's the way to record. I know Greg Cutler very, very well. And I mean, he's a great producer and he can also be very kind of strict. Did you have creative input or was a producer uber alles?
We told Greg what we wanted, but Greg knew so much more. I mean, he had recorded Rabbit. So we were so privileged. I mean, we hung on his every word. If he spoke about who he had recorded, we thought this was so important, you know, and it was. We were lucky.
The point that you made earlier about us being well rehearsed, I think that that was the basis of the whole situation, because we were out playing gigs constantly with all those songs before we got the before Greg came in. And Greg came to a couple of our gigs. Obviously, he liked what he saw and he knew what he could do with it. And that's when he started coming to our practice sessions and sort of redirecting us in certain parts. Certainly, he knew what would be commercially viable. Maybe we don't like to think of it as in those terms, but certainly Greg was looking at it as a commercial proposition from the word go. And he knew exactly what to do with what we were putting out. So we had the creative input, yes, and Greg redirected us here and there to our benefit. And I think if you look at Into the Night We Slide as an album, which was done on a shoestring, really, to me, it's an excellent album. There's not a bad song on it. So thank you, Greg.
Was there any influence from the label, from Patrick and everything, what to put down? Was he involved in what they call the A&R process?
Yes, but he did. He wanted ZX Dan. Patrick being Patrick, recognized, you know, ZX Dan above Plague Cafe. You know, we were all into like Play Cafe and Bomb Shelter Blues and all that. And Patrick said, no, you need a number one hit. And he took it to Peter Heman. Yeah, Radio 5. And then Cafe Casablanca started happening at the same time. It was a wildly exciting time. I mean, Joburg Records was still above Cafe Casablanca and all the people were there. I mean, I even met Ramsey McKay, and he was a nice guy. I sit and speak to Ramsey McKay.
Those lovely Clyde girls used to frequent the place. Mm. That was a major attraction.
Oh, yeah, I was resident there many nights and everything. With ZX Dan, which doesn't sound like anything else of the time. It's completely different. I read somewhere, Jonathan, that it was partially inspired by you seeing Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and also homage to Bowie, you know?
When we saw movies then, and there were special effects, and, you know, like Jurassic Park, which came later, then you would see a dinosaur for the first time. And, you know, Close Encounters, you would see aliens, you would see flying saucers. It was before computer-generated graphics. Now it's all blasé, but at the time, it was brilliant, brilliant, most exciting. And I thought, well, we've got to have a song that talks about UFOs and that sort of thing. So we were there. I mean, those lyrics have got zip to do with Play Cafe and, you know, a visit to the cinema and all the rest.
Well, more to do with things like Space Oddity.
Yeah.
ZX Dan is up there with some of the greatest songs in South African rock music. It regularly features when these polls come up. You must feel proud of that, if not vindicated. The original South African music was hot.
Rock and roll.
Yeah, so ZX Dan is in 12/8 time. It's in a dotted rhythm, and Leonard ate that all up for breakfast, being such a good drummer. 12/8 time. You're not a punk band playing 12/8 time, a swing beat. I mean, what song is typically like that? Well, it's going back to On the Road Again. That's where it comes from.
Well, I've seen people waltzing to ZX Dan.
It's not 3/4 time.
A song for all seasons, I think.
Well, it's pretty much a Springs anthem these days.
Eh? Yeah.
You know, everybody in Springs, oh, ZX Dan, yeah. I mean, I walk around Springs and people point me out and say, ah, oh, ZX Dan, you know. It lives on, yeah, all these years later. Mm.
Well, that's the secret to a great song, isn't it? There's a saying, the song is God. And that song has a zeitgeist in it that lives on. I mean, and there are records in South African music, songs in South African music, like, you know, Shadows and ZX Dan and things like it that resonate decades later, and not to the band. Jonathan, you write all the songs, right? All the lyrics, am I right?
Yes.
And Dave, I would imagine that you have some input into that.
Yeah, I always feel that Jonathan is the author. He does 99% of the work. I'm the editor. I make little scratches here and there. I regularly tell him, too many chords in that song, you know, or something like that. So, yeah, and I'll change a few words here and there because Jonathan, you know, is intellectually inclined, whereas I come from the street. So I think people from the street need to be able to relate to the music that we're doing. So I do edit here and there, much to Jonathan's dismay in most cases.
Jonathan, how does that writing process unfold for you? I mean, what triggers that? I mean, you've been very prolific. How does that unfold? Where did it come from?
Yes, I can turn out doggerel. In retrospect, and I say this to people now, when you come up with a good line, just a line, a title for a song, then, and if it's really good, that line must be in the title and it must be in the chorus. So when you're playing your guitar, you must make up your mind whether you're actually playing the verse or the chorus, etc. And then work your way backwards from the good line, the hook, etc., to is it in the chorus or is it in the verse, and make sure that the finished product hangs together and makes sense. Because I have written a lot of songs. When I listen to them, when I listen to the demo, I think, well, that actually doesn't hang together, doesn't make sense. So I think you've got to make sense. I absolutely bloody hate bands that have come around recently where the name of the band is obscure and the title of the song is obscure. And then you get the CD like from Uncut or Mojo and you listen to it and you think, is this song the name of the band or is it the name of the song? What on earth is this song about? I have no idea. So I go back to the sort of pop rules. Stick to them.
These days, pop music is written by 5, 6, 7, sometimes even 8 songwriters on one song. Imagine what a mess that is. Yeah, committee.
A committee, yeah. And it's generic and it's predictable. Sometimes a song falls into your lap and other times a song takes 10 years to finish.
Well, they're like little babies, aren't they? They need to be unleashed.
Yeah, and then some of them die, you know, in childbirth.
One of the threads that runs through the Rats songs and the albums is the East Rand. Songs like Plague Cafe, A Visit to the Cinema, and East Rand Town Called Springs. What is it about that area that inspires this outpouring of suburban town life?
You must ask Dave, because I come from Welkom.
Pretty much a similar sort of place, I would say, Tona. But yeah, no, Springs, you know, Springs is loaded with characters, and Brakpan for that matter. There's a history of Springs that speaks for itself. You absorb the history, and it comes out in various ways. If you're artistically inclined, then it comes out through your music. So, yeah, East Rand Town Called Springs, I mean, it's another story. And all the Rat songs, really 99% of them, are really nice stories about that have a subject matter and have a continuation through this song and beginning and an ending. It's like reading a short synopsis of a book. And Springs is the influence. Springs, the town, the history, the people. Altercations with the people from Brakpan and Benoni, and, you know.
Altercations.
That's putting it very diplomatically.
At the corner of the third and fourth stands the knife-throwing dwarf with the ringmaster who laughs each time the fire-eater coughs.
Ow! Third Street Friday sunset, then here comes Space Cadet. Blue uniform, white epaulettes, lighting up a cigarette. They're not a flying schools, just an excuse for paying the fool. But we can see in his face, he thinks he's a flying ace. He climbs onto the bus, doesn't even look at us. Scaleless with his ash, he's heading for a crash. Follow him up the stairs, see the driver's got no hair. Even fewer teeth, you know this town's beyond belief. And all aboard for the end of the world. The usual freaks, some with feathers, some with beaks. It's the same old horror show as we roll down Niger Road. That's it, Victor Hugo, telling jokes to Quasimodo. Every time the bus stops, out hops another cyclops. Where do these actors go? This town's a catalog of woe. When all aboard for the end of the world, mad conductor sings. Come on, all aboard. Round the East Grand Town called Springs. How strange. So many memories of so many strange things come from Springs.
There's an Afrikaans word called rot. And that's what used to happen every weekend between Brakpan and Springs.
Rot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a hippie like me never got involved in that. So I used to be terrified to go to Springs.
Well, Dave says that more people have been conceived at Nigel Drive-In on a Sunday night than the rest of Springs.
There's definitely a song in that. So ZX Dan, when it came out, I mean, the reaction I remember was almost instant. It soared up Radio 5's chart. Everyone was talking about it. But so generally there was media critical acclaim, but the sales reaction was the complete opposite. What do you put that down to?
Lack of promotion. I think a nationwide tour supporting Rabbit or something like that would have promoted record sales. We didn't have any of that. We just went back to playing in Springs, more or less, and then Durban and Cape Town. A lot of our gigs were great. The South African industry was in a state of flux, eh? End of the 70s. Then we entered the dark 80s. By 1985, interest rates were 25% or something. And then we got through the 80s into the new South Africa. So I think we were sliding into the night, eh? Into the 80s. The 80s were horrific.
Dave, what was your take on it?
We didn't have the promotion that we needed. I think we were too left of the field for the general stuff that had been played on radio stations and so on. Even though ZX Dan was given some airplay, it certainly wasn't any major promotion. And Joburg Records, they weren't big enough to do promotion like a big company like Gallo could have done, for example. They didn't have the infrastructure, they didn't have the money, they didn't have the contacts that TV and radio and so on that the bigger companies had. I don't think that was the major part of the problem, but we needed to be a working band. We needed to get out there. We needed to tour. As Jonathan just said, we should have done a countrywide tour and promoted the album, which never happened. we still carried on playing our little gigs here and there around Springs.
So you must have been quite disillusioned with the whole thing, having put so much work into writing and making that song and the image and the artwork and everything.
We succeeded in getting an album out, which was a major accomplishment in those days. As you mentioned yourself, the local record industry was not really interested in promoting local bands unless they were really something like Rabbit or Clout or something like that, you know, that had a major attraction. We didn't have that. We were left to the field. We were out in the cold as far as the industry was concerned. Radio stations played international stuff. Nobody supported local music.
So did that label experience, Jonathan, did that put you off the mainstream industry and confirm your decision going forward to be completely independent?
Well, I think we had this independent mindset, and Radium Records is that. And I mean, we've just carried on recording. We've always put out stuff. We're working on something called Vampire Weekends now. Now it's changed. There are no publishers anymore. They're aggregators. Samro barely communicates with me. There's no industry anymore, but there is an industry. It's changed. And change was everything. I mean, when we brought out an album, then the next one we brought out was Through Shifty, which was Big Beat, which has got East Rand Town Called Springs on it. And that was early 90s, which is also a bad time. But at that time, that was released on vinyl. And then people were picking up CDs and vinyl was being phased out. I was always doing a cassette thing for years. Cassettes have died. CDs have died. Albums are making a comeback. What the hell are you going to play in your car if it's not a CD? I don't know. Yes, you got Bluetooth and you got all that nonsense. You got a memory stick. The changing media and everything, and the internet, it's a gigantic shock to everybody. In a way, we've survived just by being independent.
When I come home, no one's there. Just a silent phone. I turn on the radio just to listen to your voice. I turn on the radio. I'm a man who has no choice. Dear DJ, I confess to a terrible loneliness. So I turn on the radio. Stars. I turn on the radio just to listen to your voice. I turn on the radio. I'm a man who has no choice. Dear DJ, I confess to a terrible loneliness. So I turn on the radio. Along you rhyme, heaven is a hot valve. Then open the door, 1954. I hear Buddy and Eddie, a whole lot more. I turn on the radio and I close my eyes. I turn on the radio. Turn on the radio.
There was a big gap between Into the Night We Slide and Big Beat, something like 10 years.
10 years.
Were you taking a sabbatical or what was that about?
No, we brought out other stuff. We brought out our own 7 singles. I did a whole cassette thing. We were basically your garage band bringing out cassettes. We did lots of stuff. Now at the moment, we're working on something called Vampire Weekends, which will come out on vinyl. And on it, there's a song, by the way, for old Dave Ledbetter called East Rand Man, of course, East Rand Man. He played for Hot Freight, and he was a school kid, and he was playing keyboards and guitar very well. I remember the girls at the bus stop going up to speak to old Dave Ledbetter and saying, "Do you play in Hot Freight?" And I was like terribly impressed, you know. Like, I mean, when did a girl ever come up to me and say, "Do you play in Hot Freight?"
But now people come up to you and say, "Hey, aren't you one of the radio rats?" So, I mean, you know, it's
yes,
just
well, mission accomplished, hey.
There's so many Radio Rats albums. I mean, the last count, I kind of got 20, but it must be more than that then. If you're talking about the cassette albums and everything.
Yeah, there's lots.
The one I've been listening to when I was prepping for this was Via Dolorosa, which lot of people...
preceded Big Beat.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is what? Latin for sorrowful way. You've always had bizarre titles.
Yeah, Road of Misery and Sorrow, because that was the road to Golgotha.
Right. But one of your most enduring songs is on there, Welcome to My Car. How'd that song come about?
The drive-in, full-on. Yeah, that's a drive-in song. You know, welcome to my car, to my gasoline-scented boudoir, you know. please excuse the stains on the upholstery, you know. The Marquis de Sade would have turned green with envy at the sight of the stains on my upholstery. That's in a droning fingerstyle thing that I've worked out for myself because I can't play ragtime. You know, there's all those ragtime, those complicated ragtime things I've always struggled with. So it's my own droning method.
Welcome to my car, to my rolling limousine, to my gasoline-scented boudoir, lined in black velvet, like a quiet space helmet, each gadget designed to undertake me. Welcome to my Chevy, steam up my windows, please. Excuse all the driving debris. You know, the Marquis de Sade would have turned green with envy at the sight of the stains on my upholstery. When I get bored by driving shows, I find the backseat so bizarre. So come on, my windows, yeah. Welcome to my car. Welcome to my car.
I think you release more music under various guises. I remember the Pop Guns, the Chauffeurs, Titus Groan, the Glee Club. Was this because the songs there didn't fit into the Rats mold, or was that just another outlet for your overactive imagination?
No, I think it's because I got divorced and I got stuck in Orkney and then Clarksdorp for 10 years while I was a single parent. And I had 8-track recording and I was making a demo a week or demo every 2 weeks. And I was writing for Peer Music. I had a contract with Peer Music, Mallory Lambert of Peer Music, sending her songs. And DAT came out. I started mixing onto DAT for the first time. And that was a quantum hop forward because DAT hasn't got tape hiss. That was brilliant. Writing demos in isolation because there was no one there. Have you been to Orkney and Clarksdorp these days? It looks absolutely horrific. It looks like it's been carpet bombed.
And you worked with other artists as well. I mean, I know you put out the Insisters, which the single, if that's what you want, which is a South African classic song. That
yes, that's Linda Dawson, Neville Dawson's daughter.
That's right.
Yeah, good. Who was the radio man? Yeah, there's a funny story of him. He was sitting talking in one of those cafes in Hillbrow, talking to a friend. This woman comes up to him and says, "Excuse me, are you Neville Dawson?" And he said, "Yes," in his radio voice. And she said, "Well, you know, I thought the radio was playing."
So Radio Rats were part of a creative collective, sort of a, for want of a better word or description, a band of musical brothers and sisters that strode that landscape throughout the early 80s. It included some friends of yours, Corporal Punishment, the Aeroplanes, the Lurchers, the Carols, Ferguson, Genuines, all of whom wrote and released music with a strong social message. The Rats didn't, or did they?
No, I think we did. But I don't like like sending a blatant thing. Like, there are songs like Shock Time for Rock. At the moment, we've got a song called In Times of Public Trouble, which is about Gaza. But they're all obscure. They require interpretation. I don't like hopping onto a bandwagon. I'd rather write in a sort of a parallel way about stuff, but at the same time write about a place like Springs.
And Springs is certainly central to the whole Rat stories. Let's talk about the artwork.
It's like a mental institution, man. Yeah.
Let's talk about the artwork, because as unique as the songs like Welcome to My Car and ZX Dan are, the artwork, any original Jonathan Hanley artwork pieces are quite collectible. But how did Johnny Rat become the symbol of the Rats? And while we're at it, the antics of the ants, how did that all come? I mean, were you a scholar of design, or did you just doodle?
My mother could draw very well, and she could draw like kittens in various positions and human faces and horses and stuff like that. And I couldn't do any of that. And I wanted to do art and I wanted to do English and everything. And they told me, no, you must go and become a professional. So there was this resentment. So I'm completely self-taught and untrained. And what bugged me about my mother is that she had this talent, but she was indifferent to it. And that I see in musicians. You get these brilliant musicians and these brilliant singers and all the rest. And then they're indifferent to it, eh? Isn't that bad? I'm self-taught astronaut.
And you continue to draw, right?
All the time. You know, I've got just about no drawings done by my mother. So she couldn't have been prolific. So I think if you're prolific, then something amongst all that crap has to be good. Not all of it, obviously. You know, a lot of it is bloody dreadful. And some songs too, I might add.
Do you think that the fact that you've remained independent and you've had other outlets contributed to the longevity of the band? You're one of the longest running continual bands. You're sort of up there with the Bats almost. Do you think it contributed to the band lasting so long?
The situation when I first met Jonathan, I was really much impressed with what he was doing. I mean, the band Slither that that was on the go when I met Jonathan. We used to do Stooges and that sort of thing. We did covers, nice versions of covers, and we did originals as well. And I think the fact that we could do originals and do our versions of cover songs had a lasting effect on me. I've been a radio rat ever since. I've never looked at myself as being anything else but a radio rat. And I think Jonathan feels the same about that, despite the fact that we've worked with other people and had other little side projects and so on. The Rats has been an ongoing thing. It's never stopped. Every time we get together, we do something constructive. We do a bit of recording, or we work out new songs, or whatever the case may be. And despite the fact that we're geographically separate now, we can still relate to each other as a group. That's the way I feel about it, and I think that's what keeps the thing going. Jonathan, as you rightly pointed out, is very prolific, and when he comes up with anything new, I'm always interested in to see what I can do with it. If I can be part of, that's fine. The Rats has become an institution.
What legacy do you want the Radio Rats to have?
We're not going to be anything more than what we are right now. We probably peaked 40 years ago, so to speak. We've been consistent from that time onwards. We've continually put out stuff. We're not going to go any higher than what we are. Our time of being rock and roll heroes is gone. We're now putting out what we feel good about.
And you're going to continue to put out albums, right?
Yeah, I think you've got to be prolific. I mean, we've just finished something called Moordenaar's Karoo, which is a booklet with lyrics and a story and a full CD of songs, and it tells a story, and it's designed for just a narrator, a vocalist like Dave, and a guitarist. Two people dressed up in black and white as Pied Crows. There's songs on it called Pied Crow Boogie and all the rest. And it's about the Moordenaar's Karoo, which is where the flood came out of and took out Laingsburg. And I mean, that is like as far away from Radio Rats as you can imagine, but it's a Radio Rats album. And we had 1,000 of those pressed, and I think we've sold one, maybe two. But we haven't promoted that yet, but we're going to go. Because that's going to be easy to promote. I mean, you just tell the story and play the songs, yeah. And I've got this place in New Bethesda called the Bat Barn, and it's got a platform where you can stand and play, and the platform is about 10 centimeters high, and it's got a piano, and it's a venue, and we have played New Bethesda a few times. You can fit about 40 people in there, and the acoustics are great because it's an old building. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to play New Bethesda a few times.
And maybe you should stockpile albums for when you shrug off the mortal coil and gradually have them released and keeping the thing alive and keeping your name going.
We've got lots of merch, eh? Because, I mean, we brought out the Concise Rock and Roll Primer and then something called Road Songs. And, each of those were about 1,000, but I think maybe we've sold 10 or 15 of those. So the New Bethesda has got a bookcase going right up to the ceiling on both sides of a window, and it's just full of merch. That's a record dealer's wet dream, Benji. If you ever want to go to the Bat Barn, you can pick up some stock there, hey? Now we're going back to vinyl. You know, we are. This album, Vampire Weekends, we're not going to press a CD. We're with What Next Music, so it's going to go onto all the platforms. So we're doing all of that. I mean, all of our stuff is on Next, which is Charles Kuhn. Hey, you must know Charles Kuhn.
They're great because they give a lot of South African artists opportunities to put the material out.
Yes, I point everyone in their direction, and they must have a big catalogue. That's actually how we're working now. If you go to that, you'll see all our stuff, compilations. It's all there on the MP3.
Bundy.
So that's our legacy, I suppose. And of course, all that merch in the backbone. That's like an archaeological dig.
Jonathan Handley, Dave Davies, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time and the memories. Hopefully we'll see you soon.
Thank you, Benji. It's been a pleasure, Matt.
Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.
One day, I close my eyes and it goes away. Tuesday, not as gloomy as the stones might say. Wednesday,
Hello, all of you. This is Jonathan Handley of Radio Rats. I hope you enjoyed this interview with Dave Ratt and myself. We recorded it in Springs on the 5th of June 2025, about 30 minutes after the whole of Springs was plunged into darkness. So this whole interview was done using an inverter. Benji Moody of From the Hip interviewed us on Solid Gold Podcast. I'd like to thank Shannon and Brennan for connecting the two of us rats in Springs up to Benji in Joburg. Please enjoy.